Letters from a Glass House is a not-for-profit ministry of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Venice, Florida. Support us today at uucov.org.
Sacred mischief, holy humor. These things sound like absolute contradictions, which is exactly why I want to talk to you about power and community and the role of the fool and about laughter. Now, when I say fool, I am not talking about the Schmendrick that screws everything up. I'm not talking about a foolish person. I'm talking about a job description that originated during medieval times, continued through the Elizabethan era, and gradually disappeared first into weak clowning and then into theater. But let's start with the first fools. The court fools of the 13th and 14th century, they were not clowns, not in the way we understand clowns today. The first fools came dressed for the job. Wild bells on three points of a floppy hat, an inflated balloon or bladder on a long stick, which they used to poke, prod, or even smack those around them. They were a minstrel and an actor and a town crier, an interpreter of complex ideas. They were clowns at times, but they were always more than that. Being a fool was serious, serious business. The role of the fool, the power of the fool, was twofold. Fools of all gender could speak to royalty and commoner alike. They formed a bridge between the rich and the poor, a path between the educated and the ignorant, and they spoke to everyone. But they alone could speak truth to power. Fools could cause change and bring transformation. Society at the time was very rigid, and it was hard to step out of the role where luck or family or social class had put you. So nothing at all like today. And change could be frightening. And interactions between social groups were almost impossible. The princess didn't go talk to the guy digging out the toilets. She might not even know his name, even though he had worked in her castle for 10 years. And then there were the fools. They were born out of the tradition of the lords of misrule. The fools let the margins become the center, and they turned the world upside down. They often opposed the powerful with their wit and their wordplay. They were entertainers and social critics, and they mocked the pomposity of the great and the meekness of the poor. They lampooned everyone's vices. They taught wisdom by demonstrating foolishness, love by playing hate, generosity by displaying greed. And the fool would pull the audience into the show, making sure they understood that reality and satire were two sides of one coin. Now, the original Feast of Fools was a very early Christian holiday. And funnily enough, it was celebrated on the same day as the Feast of the Circumcision of Christ. And if that does not sound like a party you would want to attend, you are probably very right. And what happened was a very low-level cleric, so a young monk or a young priest, was elected the Lord of Misrule, given a big staff, and allowed to make ridiculous rules that had to be followed for the entire day. And it may surprise you to hear that the Lord of Misrule's life expectancy on the next day was that of a snowball in hell. Because very senior priests and monks had very little sense of humor when it came to being forced literally to wear their underpants on their head or to run around naked. It was so bad that in 1245, Cardinal Odo, then the papal legate in France, wrote to the chapter of Sens Cathedral demanding that the feast be celebrated with no unclerical dress and no wreaths of flowers. Apparently, the head monk the prior year had been forced to run about minus his trousers and with a wreath on his head. And so the custom was finally outlawed in 1044, but you can still see it anywhere where a child or lower-level worker is made boss or ruler for the day. Religion is easy to laugh at, but the Feast of Fools wasn't meant to laugh at the weak. It made clowns out of those who were usually too important to be laughed at, and reminded everyone that they were fools for whatever divine there was. The holiday got wiped out when it was changed from its original purpose and just descended into mockery. Now, let's face it, mockery is cruel. It doesn't have any purpose in religion or really anywhere else. You hear it in stand-up comedy routines when members of one religious group laugh at the beliefs of another group. You hear it with politicians. It is the opposite of cultural appropriation. Mockery is a type of cultural rejection that shrugs its shoulders and says, "Oh, we're just having fun. Why'd you get upset?" It's cruel. Let's face it, every religion at its heart is mockable. Religion by nature deals with faith and personal belief. Your personal belief may not make sense to anyone but you. We end up sounding like we're arguing over whether or not we believe in the same or different or any invisible friend. And we fight about whether my invisible friend can kick your invisible friend's butt. Every group of us has sacred cows. Any religion or religious position, including atheism, reduced to sound bites can sound ridiculous. That kind of mockery is not what we're talking about. But back a few years ago, in 2004, the UUs had a youth con in Ferry Beach. They looked at humor and religion and examples of good and bad humor for each of our principles. And it was such a great idea, I stole it immediately. And our first principle is the idea that each person has inherent worth and dignity. And dignity and worth are what painful, abusive humor take away. Good humor makes us all laugh. I'll give you a great example. I have a couple of faults. You may be shocked, but I have some faults. One of them is that I can have a bad temper. And I'm also shameless about spoiling my pets. This can result in quite a bit of humor for anyone around. And so years ago, my late husband was sitting at our dining room table, and what he saw was a chubby minister go dashing out the door in the snow in her pajamas. And I came back holding a thing of Tupperware. And I yelled something about, "I'll teach that little stinker to steal from me." And without hesitation, my late husband said, "Did you just mug a badger for its lunchbox?" And I was so angry, I said, "It was a raccoon and it's the cat's lunchbox." And by then, he was laughing so hard there were tears running down his face. And I was still mad as bejesus. And I learned to laugh at my own temper, especially when it leads me to chase the local wildlife in my jammies for a cat food dish. When we laugh at UUism, it should be that kind of laughter. Laughter that celebrates our uniqueness and our personality and those moments that can't be reduced to sound bites. We laugh because there's a grain of truth in the silliness. A copy machine broke down at a UU church, a disorder of biblical proportions. Because it was Sunday, the repair person could not be called, and the administrative assistant desperately needed more copies of the order of service. After fluttering around the machine in distress for some time, a member more mechanically inclined than the rest found the problem. It's just out of paper, he said. Flesh and box. Right there says replace paper tray two. Can't anyone around here follow directions? And another member said, if we were the kind of people that followed directions, we wouldn't be UUs. Our second and our sixth principle call us to justice and equity and compassion, peace and liberty and justice for all people. That means that jokes which target a particular group are often bad humor and tend to violate that call to compassion. And we seek instead compassionate humor that reminds us that we're all in this together. Jokes that sound like, why did the Unitarian Universalist cross the road to support the chicken in its search for its own path? Spiritual growth and a free and responsible search for truth and meaning give us a great idea about humor. Arguing with a Unitarian Universalist is like mud wrestling a pig. Pretty soon you realize the pig likes it. UUs are the people who pray to whom it may concern. What do you get when you cross a UU with a Jehovah's Witness? Someone who goes door to door looking for a discussion. The humor points out our differences and it can be used to hurt or heal. When we look at the rights of conscience and the democratic process, humor can become satire or sarcasm. And the struggle is to keep the funny focused away from stereotyping or attacking and to center the humor on the human condition. Now, I know most of you have heard this. How many UUs does it take to change a light bulb? Well, 300. 12 to sit on the board that appoints the nominating committee, 5 to sit on the nominating committee that appoints the building committee, 8 to sit on the building committee that appoints the light bulb changing committee, 4 to sit on the light bulb changing committee, which chooses who will screw in the light bulb. Those 4 will then give their own opinion of screwing in methods. Well, 1 non-member who happens to be married to one of the 4 actually gets tired of the discussion and comes and changes the light bulb. After the completion, it takes 100 individuals to complain about the method, another 177 to debate the ecological impact of using a bulb at all, and 1 to insist that in her day, the lit chalice was quite good enough. The interconnected web is our final principle, the one that reminds us that we are all fools at times. And the world will not end because today was your turn. Sometimes laughter holds us together when everything is breaking apart. A huge fire was burning in the town square, and it looked as if everything would burn down, and the Catholics rushed into their church to save their crucifix and communion set. The Baptists rushed in and saved their historical Bible. And the Unitarian Universalists rushed in and saved the coffee pot and the fair trade coffee. Our jokes shouldn't divide us. They make us laugh together. Because one day you've got the egg on your face and the next day I do. As we head toward another emotionally charged presidential election, at times when economic inequality has reached epic levels and racial and religious tensions are rising in ways we haven't seen since the 60s, we have got to remember how to laugh at ourselves and our world. When we share nothing else with our neighbors, we share the certain knowledge that foolishness is universal and laughter can be healing. So look for the humor that reminds you we're all one people. Laugh together when you can't do anything else. Welcome the chance to be a feast of fools. Laugh. Amen.